Blog Talk Radio.
What I've left behind, you want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2147. That's 2147. I am Carol Levine. I am a survivor. I am an author. And I am also a vice president of NASCA. And tonight I will be hosting the show. We also have here on Night's Light, this is a question and answer night. And we do have a survivor professional here, and through the course of the show, if you should happen to want to call in and ask any questions, she's right here. And her name is Pastor Deborah. Actually, her name is Pastor Deborah Shrike, but I will be calling her Pastor Deborah. We also have Deborah Hunt on from Arizona, who is my co-host, and so we have two Deborahs. So we have Pastor Deborah, and we have Deborah. Let's leave it that way. So if you should happen to call in with questions, just say Pastor Deborah or Deborah. And again, I'm Carol Levine, and I will be hosting this show. Pastor Deborah, we're really fortunate to have you on tonight. I think I'm looking forward to this. I will tell a little bit about you. You are a survivor professional co-host who will field topics brought to the episodes by you, the listener. All right, tonight's special co-host is Pastor Deborah Shrike, and she grew up over the world in a military family where her mother was mentally ill and is now a survivor professional. And she is living in Pensacola, Florida. She's trained in ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker. And this is all in one person. So we're really so honored to have you on the show, because there's so many different topics and so many different areas that you are a professional in. You do a lot of volunteer work. I know that. So tell us, how did you get to be where you are today?
Okay.
Are you there?
This is Deborah. Who am I speaking with?
Oop, I think someone just got cut off. Stay there, doctor. Oh, my goodness. Okay, forget about who that you're speaking with. We have Pastor Deborah here. Can you still hear me?
That. And then what happens? I did that for about 10 years. And I did a lot mm-hmm. national lobbying. And I worked in hospitals, suicide, everything, volunteered. Mm-hmm. And then about 1995, the Lord told me, put that down. And he wanted to teach me how to help people his way so that I could learn, which I had many, many years of learning and reading, staying in church, becoming a pastor, Assembly of God minister. And still doing jails and doing groups and still dealing with the same problems, mental health, you know, child abuse, but from a different perspective, from a different viewpoint. And it was different because you still had the same person that you had to help. You had to work with the mental health community, but you were dealing in an area that most people did not know about, didn't want to talk about the spiritual part. And so I had to just study a lot, and then I went into seclusion and just stayed at home and wrote and studied. And then he allowed me to come back out and put things up, that different experiences I've had. And how I got thrown into it was I started with a very hard stuff. We'll call it multi-generational Satanism, which had everything in it. Double time, you know, child abuse, trauma, anything you can think of, child abuse, child pornography, just a lot of ick, and I had to get my feet wet very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so it's been many years of doing personal ministry, being reading, studying, writing, asking a lot of questions, like how do I help them, what's going on, and then learning how to teach people about this third part of themselves and how it too is affected by child abuse. And it also needs healing, just as the physical body does, and as the soul and the thoughts and the feelings do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at, helping people to see that there is another part of them and that it got hurt and it needs to be healed and recovered and along with the other parts.
Right, and, right.
And I try to let people know that, we'll call them pastors or faith-based people. It doesn't matter really what faith, but you'll discover when you get out in the world, in every country, in every religion, there are mental health problems. And everybody's trying to figure it out. And everybody's trying to find the answers. And child abuse is worldwide. And there's a lot of research, and there's a lot of trying to figure it out, a lot of history. And so I have to be very informed about both worlds, about the mental health, psychiatry, all the different treatments, and to try to present a very educated person that could sit at a table with a psychiatrist, respect him dearly, and the social workers, and respect everything they do because they're trying so hard to help people. And so in the process about the survival title, I guess I don't even remember when God told me that I was to have a 2-year rest period. And I said, from what? And he said, from 30 to 40 years of ick. Now you throw in family, boyfriends, just whatever. There was a lot that needed healing. And I didn't know it. You know, you don't really know sometimes. So I stayed home and talked to squirrels and walked the yard and cut grass and just quiet time because he was doing something somewhere in me that would needed that involved 30 to 40 years. By this time, I'm probably in my 50s that needed healing. And so you start getting these from a personal experience that if I needed that, and, you know, I didn't have a lot of the, we'll call it child abuse that most people had, then I could imagine what other people had. And you throw in, you know, early relationships, boyfriend, girlfriends. You lose a job, you lose a favorite pet. Things don't work out the way you expect. Loss of parents, your parents die, your dogs die, your cats die. You know, you go through storms like they're doing now and you lose your whole house. Yeah. We have a lot of hurt in us and wounds. And so I needed to have some healing. So, so I went through that. And then I stepped back out on the stage to bring the role of spiritual care into the mix along with everything else everybody's getting. Any questions?
No, I can understand what you're saying. You know, a lot of times people just plain get burnt out, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
And also, too, we have those of us that do so much work with other people, and there are quite a few of us that do that, what happens is we need to take a step back and take a breath, okay?
Yes.
Because if we don't, we then we're no longer effective. We can't hear, you know, what needs to be done. On NASCA, we believe in healing that comes from any different type of organization
mm-hmm.
or place. You know, it can be church. Mine was church, okay? It can be
mm-hmm.
Through therapy, all different kinds of ways. And none of them are right or none of them are wrong, you know what I'm saying? What's right for one person might not be right for the other. And but what we have inside within us, which we do speak about from time to time, we have that inner child, too, that
mm-hmm.
needs to be healed. Those of us, you know, who have been so horribly abused in our lifetime, we have to heal that child, okay, that inner child. A lot of us do pray. A lot of us believe in prayer. I certainly do. I believe that I've been directed in many different areas in my life to different people. Different situations, and sometimes I don't see exactly why, and then all of a sudden, bang, it hits me in the face, and I say, oh, that's why I'm here, okay. So, you know, that's, you know, it's, I've actually had ministers in my family. I'm Catholic. We have Catholics and Protestants in my family. And there was always a lot of chitter chatter between that. Wow. But, you know, there was a lot there. But, you know, the point is that some of us, we do go into ministry, whether it be ministry like through NASCA or, you know, where we minister each other and then other people that come our way. So I know where you're coming from, okay, because I always felt. I was a part of a prayer group, and I was told that there are certain ministries that I should, you know, be working with, and that's why I'm
mm-hmm.
here at NASCA, okay? And I do other things, too. I work with domestic violence. So I'm a survivor of all those things that you were speaking of. Most of us
mm-hmm.
are, you know. Well, we all
mm-hmm.
have our stories to tell. They're not the same, you know, but trauma is trauma. And
mm-hmm.
That's what's so terribly important is the fact that we have been, you know, traumatized and we need to heal and we get on our healing journey one way or another. We do that.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, by getting on our healing journey, we have our own self to heal. And sometimes, like you said before, you have to step backwards. You have to. And you have to be calm. And you have to think so that you can then again move forward. So, whether it takes you to the prison system or whether it takes you to churches or whether the ministries take you to people in general outside in the community, I'm very much interested in community and trying to help community, things like that. This is all a very important thing, and this is the only way that people are going to heal, all right, I believe. I want to give out our telephone number. I was supposed to do that before, but I see the sky getting grayer and grayer. Okay. The telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Tonight is a question and answer night. And we have, as a guest, we have a very good guest, and her name is Pastor Deborah. I'm going to call her Pastor Deborah. And you can call in at any time and ask about spirituality, you know, our spirit and our soul. And she is trained in ministry, mental health. You have mental health questions. We have someone right here who can answer that. And she also works with substance abuse and is a trauma-informed social worker. So with all of this in one, she's someone that you can, you know, feel free to ask questions of. Deborah, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask Pastor Deborah?
Yes, I do. But first, let me also add that the chat room is open. So if anybody would like
mm-hmm.
to just go on the chat room and ask any questions of Pastor Deborah, they can also go there and reach out to us, and we will put them on air. So please be sure, if you want to reach us, just go to Blog Talk Radio, and you can reach us through the live chat. So
that's good.
Your
yeah.
story.
Okay.
Your story is just amazing. and very intriguing. But my question is, what really made you go into the ministry? What was that one thing that made you go through all of this? Because you said you had your mother who had mental illness and all that.
Okay. Probably the best way to explain it, I probably always had that, we'll call, divine purpose to do that. But I didn't know it. I just loved people that were kind of weird growing up that nobody really liked. And when I got into, after I got my master's and got state licensed here in Florida and nationally certified, I worked in a rehab hospital. And my job was to do counsel with spinal cord injury patients and head injury patients and stroke patients and people with amputations and cancer patients. And one person just wanted a Bible and to have a chaplain come and talk to him. So I referred him to a chaplain and got him a Bible. And I got my hands slapped by the professionals. And I told them that that was my job, to help emotionally support a person. If that's what they wanted and that's what they needed, to, then I was to refer them. I didn't do the work, so I started, God started stirring me that I wasn't happy. I wanted to help people. I didn't know how. And I had all this education and certifications, but I never really fit. I couldn't understand some of the things that they were talking. I never really got into it. I mean, I was in nursing homes, doing groups, you know, everything you could think of. And I couldn't really see about charging people money. I was around suicide people, went to the state hospitals for mental illness, worked there. And it was a slow process, and doors started closing. And then I applied for a job at a college, just sort of step back. You get tired of helping people, getting your hands slapped, trying to do what you sort of think you're supposed to do. And God said, I don't want you to take your time and energy supporting, lifting up something else. I want you to take that for me. So I gave up all my job, gave up my salary. Became dependent on my husband, volunteered, have no income of my own, and I just started reading. Then I said, okay, I'll take my license and go be a counselor in a church, get on staff. And that almost worked out, but that got slammed, and then God asked me, okay, that didn't work out. What are you going to do? Are you going to still come after me and learn about me, or are you going to quit? So I decided not to quit. I had no idea where I was going. And then I started realizing that a lot of people around the world did not have the joy I had, did not have the assurance of upon death where I was going. They couldn't really sing and dance and be happy. And I started crying for them. And I'd go to church and the praise and worship music would come on, and I cried. And I'd cried for months and months and months, and my heart was hurting for these people that were trapped in such horrible stuff and couldn't get out, couldn't find it, didn't know what was wrong. I didn't know why it was, and I just cried and cried. And God saw the heart that it was wanting some people that did not know him to enjoy singing to him or dancing. So he took that broken heart that just cried. I couldn't do anything else. I'd go to I'd see a picture of a rose in a supermarket on a magazine. I'd start crying and just bawling right there in the checkout counter. And I didn't know at the time what was happening, but God was allowing me to feel his heart and how he felt and the tears he was crying for these people all over the world, didn't matter what they were, and how broken and hurt and wounded they were. Now, I didn't know that. I just knew that that's how I felt. So then he said, put your license down. I ended up in a Sunday school class. They started talking a lot about the spiritual world and, you know, a lot of scriptures about the Bible. And I go, I don't know anything about it, you know. been saved since I was four, prayed to Jesus, but I knew nothing. So I had to read, and I had to study books, and I had to learn about the other side, and witchcraft, and the occult, and Satanism, and mind control, and spiritual abuse, and what the Catholic Church does believe in is exorcisms. I had to learn that. I had to study, what is that? I don't know, never knew. So it was years and years of books and books, six at a time. Being in church a lot, still crying, broken over some people that there was somebody I knew that loved them, but they didn't know it. And they couldn't get out of some of the stuff they were in.
Yeah.
And so over time, and getting knowledge by reading and studying, looking on YouTube, looking at History Channel stuff, reading more books, knowledge just kept coming and kept coming. Then I started getting trained, and God had to show me what multiple personalities look like in people that I didn't know. But you don't get that in the master's level of mental health counseling. PhD psychologists do, but not the master's. So I didn't know. I didn't know anything how they got formed. I didn't know anything about cutting. I didn't know anything about a lot of stuff, you know, about religion and cults and things. I had to study. I had to study the psychics, the New Age, and psychic healings and yoga. And I had to look back at civilizations and the start of every religion and denomination. So God was leading me through subjects, just time, and, you know, trying to sort of, I don't know what you call it, I was behind. I realized I didn't really know any truth back in about 1995, that the world had lied to me. I believe there was a tooth fairy and a Santa Claus and Easter Bunny. And I had so much believed in that, I told my son there was that. And I had to repent for that because that was a lie. But that's what, okay, so God was working in every area. He was getting knowledge to me, opening up things I had no knowledge about, showing me a bigger world than I knew, showing me history, showing me a lot about other religions and things. And it just took a lot of staying steady.
Let me jump in here for a moment. This is Bill.
Yeah.
From
California.
I was trying to listen to a show on my computer because even when I'm not scheduled as the host, I pretty much monitor every show, Carol. So I was trying to do that, and I couldn't hear it on my computer. Now, I don't know why. It could be just my system because I tried numerous things, as I always do before I bring something like this up. But in case there are people out there who are not able to do what I was trying to do, I just want to bring that to your attention. And I see that you only have, it took me a while to come to this conclusion, but I see you only have, you know, a couple other people there. So I decided I'd just open my mic and speak so that you had an additional panelist. So now, Dr. Pastor Deborah, I need you to know that, you know, in order for you to allow this to be a dialogue, because I think probably Carol and Deborah and certainly myself, I know I do, would have some comments or questions about what you just said. You have to let us in by pausing for a moment and seeing if anybody wants to make a contribution. All right?
Okay.
You're doing great. But you have to understand that's kind of the pattern that we need with a discussion show like we're having. So not to take any fire away from Carol, but Carol, you're doing a great job. I know you are. Anyway, I'm here for
you. Well, let me say something here, Bill, and also, Pastor, hold on a second. I am under tornado watch, and I'm having a little problem with hearing and everything. Trust me. I'm getting funny noises. So if I disappear all of a sudden, it wasn't because I know magic, okay? Yeah, see, I can hardly hear you now. This is bad. All right, I am here, and I would like to ask a question of you, Pastor. And I do hope that other people are listening. I do hope that they will call in, and do not feel funny about calling in. It's 646-595-2118. We have a lady here who has dealt in all different types of ministries, including mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker. Keep that in mind. She is now telling us about her ministry, about how she feels that God has spoken to her, and how he leads her to where she goes and who she has to minister to. And she had just spoken about mental health and also two other things. Now, the only question that I have for you is you're going like 90 miles per hour, and so is your life. And where are you today? Okay, who are you ministering to today? What type of work are you doing right this second? And
okay.
All the things that you've mentioned. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. One, I have a little church in a flea market booth where I minister to people on Saturdays and Sundays who need prayer, teaching, hugs. I give out free books. And then on Mondays, I'm in a homeless Christian shelter giving the lunch devotional and ministering with homeless people. On Wednesdays, I go to the acute stabilization unit of a Lakeview center, and I do about a two-and-a-half-hour spiritual care group to those people who have come into the acute crisis stabilization. I also will be going this week on Thursday to a crisis intervention team meeting with the law enforcement. I also do ministry. I'm going to be doing tomorrow morning discipleship training over in Kenya with a church there, and I have another church in Kenya which I am doing ministry with online and in emails and stuff. So I'm doing church work around the world. Then I also have human trafficking task force, which I am a part of. And I also do a lot of writing and blogging and posting. So it's sort of a multifaceted ministry.
Well, it's a shame you're not busy, you know, because you have a lot of time.
Yeah, my God. That's right. Let me ask you something now. With the human trafficking, what do you do? You how do you approach that? How does that come to you? You go to where people are being human trafficked. That you're trying to save their spirit, their soul, to talk to them. What do you do with these people? How do you help them?
Most of my life, because of the multi-generational Satanism ministry I got thrown into, just about everybody that I came into contact with personally or on the phone or online was human trafficked, child pornography, survival sex, working for the mafia out in Los Angeles. So from day one, I've been there. What slowly happened in human trafficking is that there's a lot of law enforcement involved, and then they take them, and they have to put them in homes. And there's a lot of good Christian homes, but most of the therapy and the healing is done from mental health caseworkers, and there's not a lot of spiritual care done because they haven't quite let, we'll call us ministers, faith-based people, sort of get in there yet. And so the human trafficking, you have to, it's easy to care about the one who's been trafficked, and you have to care about them. But my heart also is for the one who's doing the trafficking and the one who is, we'll say, buying the sex. And usually there's not a lot of sympathy for these people. It is a worldwide thing. It is. There's some great movies out there regarding it. And you have to understand what happens when some child is trafficked, how they survive it. What is going on in the trafficker's mind? Why would he do this? It's a very hard place. I try to remind people that when you're sort of a faith-based person, you can't just love the one who's trafficked. You must have a heart for the one who did the abuse and that there's something wrong with them too. And so it's a little more difficult. But here in the state of Florida, a lot of your foster homes are sort of in group homes. They're losing money because there's such a big national emphasis on human trafficking. Money from Washington is sort of going that way, that just your normal child abuse that most of us hear about, it's old hat, can't do anything. But these other people that have been kidnapped and sold, they deserve some help and money. So, things are sort of changing money-wise out here. Any questions?
Let me go to the panel first and see if Deborah has any questions about what you just said. I have questions, mm-hmm. and then we'll go to Bill, and then we'll go back to what you're speaking about. Right here with the human trafficking, because we do deal, of course, with sexual abuse, physical, mental, mm-hmm. emotional, and neglect. Okay, so let's go to Deborah first. Go ahead.
Yes, Pastor, I wanted to ask you, you know, when you said you do feel for the trafficker as well as the person who has been trafficked, but and I that's something that you internalized for yourself. How would you suggest to others to open up their heart to be able to forgive the trafficker and the abuse that they pushed on somebody else? Because that is something that a lot of people do not have enough compassion for. Even the most compassionate people still struggle with that. So I was just wondering how you got to that point.
Okay. I had to be able to look at both the abused and the abuser, that they both were loved by God. And most of us have heard that an abused person grows up and abuses people. And I had learned that the apple didn't fall very far from the tree a lot of times. And so I had to learn very hard. Let me tell you, I've had them in my house, and knives have come down to kill me. They have shot me, poisoned me, and I still had to find within me, with God's help, to love them who were trying to kill me. I had to dig, I had to pray, because God loved them too. And they are a mess. Probably, usually they're older people, and they are horrendously abused themselves. And I had to be able to be attacked by them, sent to the hospital, take them in my homes, have them steal from me, attack me, file false police reports against me, and still loved them. And it was not easy. But I had to see them through a different set of eyes. And I had to learn, I had to read, I had to study. There's plenty of books, people who have been an abuser and will say they get saved or God touches them. And they write a book and they tell their story. I had to read a lot of those. And I had to read their testimonies. So that's how I sort of got there.
Wow. And that sounds tremendous. But thank you for that answer. Thank you so much.
I think I started with my mom. I didn't have her most of my life, her mental illness. And when she died, I had to remember the good parts of her, that there was some good, but there wasn't much. And when I chose to remember the good, that helped. But you have to dig deep, and you have to look with different eyes than what you look at to do that, and it's hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can agree with the mother angle.
Yeah,
I had to look
too.
Really
Carol,
deep,
like, yep.
And Deborah had also. We had the same type of mother, and trust me, this is very strange. Well, she died on Memorial Day. The 31st she died. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so that anniversary, if you will, is coming up. And I was thinking the other night, was there good? And yes, there was good. It just wasn't towards me, but there was good in her. Towards other people, and which is where I've learned how to give. I love
mm-hmm.
to give to people, and to do for people, and to do all kinds of community work and all kinds of things. Because my mother actually did a lot of giving and so forth. There's a story behind my mother and I, which I will not go into now. But I can honestly see that she did have goodness in her. However, when mm-hmm. you speak about forgiving the trafficker, those who
mm-hmm.
have injured children, especially, I mean anyone, but children, of
mm-hmm.
course, and ruined their lives, because this is what we're speaking about. You're speaking to people here who have been
mm-hmm.
so sexually abused, you know, and so much we had to try to get on with our lives, which we have done. We're survivors on this show. I have a hard time in my heart because I know that they believe that what they're doing is okay, and also that a lot of them just don't care. They just want to make the
mm-hmm.
money. You were talking about the money before.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't care what harm they put against other people. I have
mm-hmm.
a hard time, you know, looking at it in the same light that you do, okay? I think they should go to jail. I agree.
The crime has been committed according to the laws, and they need to go to jail. I agree.
Mm-hmm. But it says in the Bible also, too, since you are a spiritual and biblical person, as am I. I may not speak about it much, but it also says in there, suffer the little children. I mean, they didn't like children being beaten or anything else. I mean, God,
right.
Christ, they didn't go for this. So I don't see how you can put the two in the same category where you could say that we have to look at them with different eyes because God's eyes wouldn't look like looking at that.
No, he doesn't. But he also, what he tries to do is if a crime has been committed based on the laws of any country and you break that, then you go to prison or jail. Okay? Now, what happens mm-hmm. there, God's eyes are looking long term. Okay? They did something that broke the law. It hurt somebody. They need to pay for that. Now, what he's hoping for is that during that time they're incarcerated or whatever, they come to their senses and go, that was wrong. And that they change. And so that when they die, they don't go to the bad place. And sometimes
that's
the best.
That's what it is.
Okay. Sometimes that's the end goal he's after. Some of them will never get out of prison or jail. They'll never be able to fix what they did. It's like they don't value another human. They don't see the child as a human. They don't know they're blinded or whatever you want to call it. And yes, they need to be in jail and prison. Okay, so they do that. Now, during that time, God's hoping that they will sort of, the light will come on and they will realize what they did. They can't change it. But God can heal the child. Okay? Therapy can help. Other programs can help. And that person that did that can have a changed life. He may not never get out of prison. But upon his death, he don't go to hell. And that's about the long, God's in it for the long road that that person and the other person doesn't carry the weight of the unforgiveness with them. And even though it happened, if you believe in higher powers, they can do a lot of stuff and fix a lot of things, but there's no memories. That what happened is fades away, the sea of forgetfulness, and somebody that was lost and on their way to hell, this evil thing could be turned to good in the end, in the long end. So sometimes that's the long end that he's looking at.
Okay, so
and,
let me speak.
No, I want Bill to talk. Yeah, I was just going to say, go ahead, Bill.
Thanks, Carol. You know, first of all, I want to assure any listener that's out there that, you know, this is not a requirement by any means of being in NASCA to work with, you know, people who are incarcerated for things like sex offenses against children. Well, that's not required. But it is a possibility. And Pastor Deborah has gotten to a place where she is positioned to be able to do that. She also does work with survivors, too, and other communities of survivors, even. But I just want to assure people of that. However, what I really want to say about what you're talking about is the notion that, you know, we're all spiritual beings, all of us. And I have learned that there's a little bit of bad in the best of us, and there's a little bit of good in the worst of us. None of us are perfect, and we're all kind of spiritually broken, if you want. And that's kind of what we aspire to. Those of us that are on a spiritual path, we aspire to getting at least a little better, you know, in our higher power and in how we serve the community around us. And the community can include those who are incarcerated and so forth. Now, you're not saying to work with them so that they get out someday, and just mentioned this. You're saying to work with them so that their soul is more prepared than it was when they committed the crime or when they got into the penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very valid way to do it. But I want to say, because most people who are out here listening, they have broken souls too. We all do. That, you know, the path to recovery, it may or may not include the basic topic here is forgiveness. You know, is acceptance first of, for example, the criminal element in them. And you mentioned some of them have no conscience about what they've done. You call those psychopaths or a sociopath. They don't relate to the person they're doing the activity with, the child, at all. It's just it's like a doll. You know, it's a toy. It has no feelings, including
no
pain
empathy.
And even death. Right? No empathy at all. Right. So obviously, we want people to understand that all of us deserve some kind of empathy, but, you know, it's completely up to the individual as to how far they want to take this notion of working towards forgiving their own predator, for example. Maybe it's just one of their family members or somebody in the community that, when they were young, molested them. That's entirely up to them. However, I do want to say that, you know, you have to also forgive yourself because, as I said, that we're all broken people. And a lot of us come into recovery thinking, you know, oh, woe is me. I'm a piece of crap. Nobody's going to love me ever. I'm not lovable, in other words. They're going to throw me away. I won't even be believed because we've had that experience. I'm so ashamed at what I did, which the child, of course, is completely innocent. But that's the thinking that we come in. And I really want to reassure anybody that's new here that, you know, it's not necessary at all to do any kind of forgiveness to others. But I hope that you can see that one of the first things that's really beneficial is to give yourself a break. Start to forgive yourself if that's an element of what you bring to recovery. Because you were, as far as we're concerned, innocent and should be held harmless, even though we know, because all of us went through it too, that when we get here, we do feel kind of responsible and ashamed and all of those, many of us do anyway. So I just wanted to interject thought, Carol, Deborah, Pastor Deborah, you know, conversation sort of more NASCA oriented.
think you're absolutely right, Mr. Bill. The first step for anybody is that self-forgiveness. And that's also a hard road for people to walk, but that's usually where people need to start, is there.
Yeah, and most of us don't devote our lives to becoming a minister, for example. Now, I think of myself as having a ministry or a mission in life that has a lot of spiritual elements to it, but I have not gone as far as to, you know, to claim any kind of title or position or anything like that. I always say to people, you know, who thank me for what I do, I say, well, I'm just a guy. And I really mean by that anybody can do this. You know, you don't have to be special. Yes, some of us will position ourselves like you have, Pastor Deborah, which is wonderful, to do the kind of work you're doing. And it's really needed out in the world there too. But most of us are not going to go to that length. We're going to have our job, whatever our job is. And we're going to have our family, and we're going to have to dedicate ourselves to living our life as best we can. All of us can contribute, Carol, you know, to make a contribution towards the fight against child abuse and trauma in whatever aspect we do it. And NASCA is a very good vehicle for them to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. We, all of us, we here feel that we're on a mission, you know. We may all do different things, but we all have one purpose in mind, and that is, of course, is to help two things. First of all, the adult survivor of child abuse, who's still on their healing journey and working hard on their healing journey, and that's why we are available. Well, with me, it's 24/7, because I stay up all night. Explain that one, Pastor.
I did.
But, you know, that's what we do. And then also, too, we do fight for the rights of children. And I work with both. I work with the children as well as with adults. I get phone calls. I don't call them. They call me. They have my number. So, you know, I believe that I learned a lot in my life by the things that came to me in my life that were not pleasant. And people have a choice. You can either become a bad person, a person that, and they don't have to be a psychopath or a sociopath. They can be a person that just plain makes bad choices and they don't care, you know, if they hurt people, but they're not a psychopath or a sociopath. Or you can be a person that wants to go out and help to make things better. Help to make things better. First, you have to make yourself better, and then you're able to help other people. That's what we do here. One of the many things that we do here at NASCA, and that can lead us in all different directions, but always with the same purpose in mind. Now, you mentioned also, too, that you work with police officers. What do you do with the police officers? How do you speak to them, and what do you speak to them about?
Okay. When I went through the training for crisis intervention, what they're trying to do is when there's a disturbance in the house and you call the police, if somebody there, they ask for a policeman trained in CIT, crisis, they know how to de-escalate. They're aware of mental health problems, autism in children. They know what to look for if this is a substance abuse problem versus a mental health problem. So being a pastor with first responders, they have to be on the front lines, and they get hit with trauma and situations, and they have to get a hard job done. And a lot of it's not very pleasant. So I also sit to try to help them so they know that they need to debrief and they need to take care of themselves. So a pastor I could go out on the calls with them if they asked, but at the same time, they need to have a confidential person so they can cry with, let this stuff out. they're like soldiers. They have to do a job. They'll get it done, and they won't talk about it. And they need somebody that knows what happens in that trauma to them. So that's sort of the relationship. Then in my sexual assault team, I met with some nurses, emergency room people who have to do the rape, the kits, and, you know, with the police, gather the evidence. They're the same way. They'll get the job done. But I told them that, pastors, if you trained in emergency rooms, which I have been, I can stand there and hold that person's hand while they do what they need to do, because they have to get evidence. And at the same time, emergency room people are seeing the brunt of it, and they need to know that there are caring individuals in the community that got their back, that are praying for them, that are there for them to sit in a group and just cry if they need to. So that's kind of what I do. Any questions?
I can see. No, I just a comment. I can see where that need is, you know, with the police officers, because they have a very, very, very stressful job. And a lot of times they have to draw their gun. And then they have to speak to someone, because maybe they shot and killed someone. This is not an easy job. Detention is number two. That's number one. Detention is number two, which I worked. And it's a very stressful job. And they do need to speak to someone, you know, who can calm them, who can rationalize with them, who can also deal with the competency of a level of the person, if this is something where they have to take maybe a month off and get counseling during that time, where they had to take those steps. So that they do. That they already do, and it's good to have people, you know, at their side to help them. Do either of you two have a question? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well,
finish.
Actually, Carol, I just wanted to say that we now have Sherry on the panel. Sherry DeFonso from Pennsylvania is on here. And she's been in the chat room for a bit, but she wasn't able to hear from her computer. But she's now here, so I just wanted to give her a moment to introduce herself and see if she had any questions.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Go ahead, Sherry.
No, I just really called to listen. I wanted to, I don't have much to say, but hello.
Okay, that's fine. We're glad you're here. You may change your mind about that. And want to ask a question. With what you were saying, we'll get back to what you were saying, Pastor Deborah. You should see my sky. Say a prayer for me. I think that tornado, it's coming out. We're until 10 p.m. tonight, Bill. But anyway, okay, so we have a person such as yourself. We already have people in place, you know, where they do speak to police officers or people in detention or other terribly stressful jobs, the nurses, the doctors, and whomever needs to be spoken to. And it's good to have that service. That's a need, because we do have inside of us. We do have people who work in fields like that. We do sometimes have guilt. You know, my God, is there something else that I could have done to maybe help that person, or did I, a police officer, did I have to, you know, draw my gun at that time? In detention, I had to restrain at times people, and then they get their shot or that event. You know, and sometimes there were terrible fights, and you know, all kinds of things that we had to go through to try and get order, try to protect that person, protect ourselves, and protect society. So that I can understand you being a part of. With what you mentioned about earlier with the exorcisms, I was a part of the prayer group and Catholic. So I know, too, about the exorcisms. That would have to be something that would be a crazy thing to be a part of, to heal, to watch, to exorcise that person. I know you can't do it unless you have a priest or someone with you. I know that. Am I right in that?
You can do it. You can be taught to do it. But the priest, what I do like about the Catholic Church is what they will do is they will do a very thorough medical and physical check to see why this person is acting the way they are. Because they're going to first rule out any brain tumors, low blood pressure, diet. And then they're going to have a thorough psychiatric exam. They go through all that, and they determine there's nothing there. Then they do believe that there is something spiritual there. And they do have their rituals. They're trained priests to do that. And there are the true story that most of us have seen was The Exorcist. And it was a true story, except the Linda Blair, the real story was a little boy. And the priest that was part of it, he told afterwards. And how it, he said it came about is that some grandparent had been in witchcraft that sort of opened this door. It wasn't to that extent. But I do like that because they do believe in that, where a lot of your other faiths sort of do, maybe do, and but they're not really highly trained like the Catholic priest. They are very educated in it. They study it. They are very thorough in their spiritual knowledge about that world, and they are very proficient in what they do. They and so a lot of people can learn the same stuff, and they can do that. It takes a lot of education. But I was going to say about the in the police work and in the emergency rooms and through human trafficking, what they're finding is if you work with people who have been abused and you're a therapist or a counselor or something, or nurse, if you have unresolved issues in your own life that you haven't quite healed all the way from, they have a tendency to come up with the trauma that happened to somebody else. In police work, corrections work, high divorce rate, high suicide rate. So what they're involved in is very stressful for them. And they found out in human trafficking, the therapists that are helping the people, and they get in there in that dark stuff, they discover they had unresolved issues that they'd forgotten about, and then they have troubles. And so there's a lot of people still that things happened in their life that they sort of set aside, didn't want to think about, just get on with life. And they get in the helping professions or first responders or whatever, and things happen, and it all comes back around. So there has to be some of us out here that have gotten some level of healing from our lives and try to help the other people, whatever profession they're in, whether they're a CEO or they're a fireman. The helping professions are probably the hardest because they're in the mess all the time. They see dead babies and dogs, and, you know, they see the houses burn. But it does take somebody getting some healing. You can still be working on your own healing because then you can help other people. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
I can't believe that. Yeah, do you, what do you do with children who have been sexually abused or who are beaten? Child abuse in general with children. How do you respond to that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of times, I just love the child. I know what's going on inside, because here's what happens. If you listen to some people's stories, they will tell you somehow when the abuse was going on, they disassociated from the abuse. Mm-hmm. If you watch the movie The Three Faces of Eve, she did not get sexually abused, but the trauma of kissing her dead grandmother caused her to form other people in her life, and she lost time. Doesn't matter if it's child abuse. It's a natural thing. The spirit will run and escape. It will become whatever it needs to become. It will leave its body. It will go up on the ceiling. It will go into sleeps, into trances to survive. Now, we hear about it in disassociation, compartmentalizing from the pain or the feelings. All children do that. I left my body at 4 years old. I was getting my tonsils out. And back then, it wasn't very kid-friendly, okay, in military hospitals. And we had something called ether that smelled like overripe cantaloupe. I just remember I saw myself running down a hall, looking back, but that my body was on the table. Out of fear, that part of me that we all believe is going to go to a better place when we die, it left. Who told me to do that? I don't know. But it ran. And a lot of people nowadays, because of the opioid stuff, are having these out-of-body experiences because they're dying. And then their hearts get wrecked. And they're having these experiences that they can't explain. And they're discovering that there is more to them than just their physical body or even the little child inside. There's more. They don't know what more is. And then when people do die, everybody's hoping that they go to some nice place and they're out of their pain. So my job as a pastor is to let people know, okay, if you believe that, let's get a higher power in. A lot of faiths believe in that. Let's get him on in there. Let's get the psychiatrist, the psychologist, the case. Let's get all hands on deck. We got a problem, and we need everybody working and thinking and looking at it from every angle to try to solve this. And if we all work together and respect each other and we look at it from, well, maybe you need some B12 or maybe you've had brain injuries over your lifetime, like the concussions, okay? Maybe you have to learn then, get you off the drugs and alcohol, and now you got to learn some things. Because they discovered if you did marijuana, say at 5 or 8 years old, and you did it for 10 years, then you stop. You emotionally stopped growing. So now you're a 20-year-old, and you think and you emotionally only developed as an 8-year-old. So all your, now they know that from the substance abuse statistics. So when you have a child, okay, the best thing that you do is you just love them. You let them know they're okay. All right? Now, they're going to compartmentalize, okay? They're going to form, they're going to run and hide on the inside. The little ones hurt, but they're there, okay? They're there. And you watch movies and you learn, okay? They are easier to heal in a safe, even the inner child, when it feels that the person that they're with is a safe and loving person. I used to bring them in my home. They had multiple personalities. They lived here, 2 and 3 at a time. They lay on the sofa and suck their thumb. And little boys would come out and stick their mouth at me. And then some bad ones would come out. I had to learn how to live with all of that, love each little part, each little child on the inside, learn how to talk to it, love it. I've had them crawl under a bed, and they ain't got no clothes on. And I have to get them out, but they got clothes on, but they don't think they do. So I had to study disassociation. I had to watch all the movies. I had to study child abuse. I had to read stories about the horror and the stuff that happens and what they develop in their mind as adults. And how some of them got healed, and I had to read and read and hear testimonies. And our people don't realize the mind that we have is so powerful with the right environment of love and care, steady over time, it can heal.
I believe that. Go ahead. Go ahead, Deborah. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I actually do. And when you're speaking about this, when I was reading your bio, you're talking about teachings of the three parts, and that's being of spirit, soul, and physical body. And it sounds like that's part of what you're doing when you're speaking about all this. How do you actually go in and teach this? What are the techniques that you use if they're not a spiritual kind of person?
Okay, when I go into the acute stabilization, I take a big board with me, and I draw three gingerbread people. I say, you just ministered to your physical body. You ate lunch. The psychiatrist is giving you medication. And he's trying to figure out what chemicals in the brain or your body is out of balance. That's a real important part. Because if you have too much sugar, not enough sugar, you've been dehydrated, you've been on substance abuse, your system is messed up. So that's his job. That's his area of expertise. Then the soul part is where the mental health works, and they're dealing with your feelings, your anger. I said, there's no test. I can't put you under an MRI machine or an X-ray and tell to find out, where's your anger? What's angry? There's no test. So we have to talk to you and ask questions. But I tell them, I said, most of us grew up as I did. You come from a culture. We do not talk about the family. We don't talk. We keep it all inside. And boys are raised one way and girls are raised another way. But we're all thinking about it. We're all, I tell them, but that area where our feelings are, but then I tell them, this is what Freud taught a lot of people, is that you have an awareness, a front awareness, that you know you're on here right now, but there was this other part that was deeply hidden, deep, the real us, that might be real angry, but we don't really know that he's there. And that part, a lot of times, is hurt and wounded, a bully. And then that other part. And a lot of people discover this other part if they've had an out-of-body experience. Some have had it through near death. I have died. I've had a pacemaker. I've died. I've left my body. A lot of drug people. If you talk to little kids or you talk, they'll tell you, they'll use the word disassociate. And they will form, they'll do whatever spiritually. So I say, that part over there has been hurt too. And it's been through this stuff. And that's the part that works with the higher power, whatever you believe that to be. And then I talk to them about the history of civilization that we all used to believe, even back to Egypt, in gods and higher powers, but that was what they were supposed to do. So I usually talk to them, and I show the three parts, and I talk to them about, let's get this other part. I had one young guy. He said, I used to go to church as a child, but I think my spirit went to sleep. How do I wake it up? I had another lady I worked with. She was 4, and she had to have some surgery. They told her to go to sleep, so they gave her some medicine. Well, she found out in her 60s that her spirit was still asleep. And she had to wake it up. And she didn't know that, but she was saved. But that part of her could not help her. It was sleeping. And then there's other cultures that you study. They are very connected to higher powers. And they know that. And they use that. And they are had to explain to a lot of psychics sometimes. They use a force. And I say, well, I don't. But so it sometimes it's a slow process. But I figured if we get everybody that's expert in all the areas together, working to help a person to figure out what's wrong and to come up with solutions, then we're better off. We got everybody working on the problem. And we all respect each other from our different fields because they're all important. And everybody needs to be working in all areas. And they're usually in the mental health world, most of them, I can talk to them, because they have strange things happening at home, in their sleeps. You know, it's drug-related, and they can't talk about it, because then you get those labels, hallucinating, you know, delusional. So they don't really talk about it, but if they can, if you talk to a Catholic priest about some of this, he'd say, yep, that's real. Okay. Any questions so far?
Yeah. Well, I don't have questions. a lot of times I just make comments. I know a lot of what you're saying, but however, I do have some questions in my mind. On NASCAR, we have people who dissociate all the time, many times. Yeah, and I wish that I had dissociated at times, I think, because I remembered everything at any moment, every given. People have often asked me when I wrote my book, how could you remember every single detail? And quite frankly, I did remember every single detail. Some things I left out for safety's sake, okay? I left it out because I had to. But there's still 314 pages, so there's a lot to read. But with the people who dissociate, it's because at the time when they're being sexually abused, or I would use that as the main category where a person would dissociate, I would think, they cannot handle what's happening. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, therefore, they dissociate because, quite frankly, it's too much of a trauma for them to accept. They have to go somewhere else. Now, mm-hmm. this is not a form of multiple personalities. This is what the mind does. It splits, in a sense, so because the child can't take that abuse at that time. And then it comes back. And see, so many times when people who have the MPVs, as they used to call the multiple personality disorders, when they have true MPV, they don't come back. They stay away. They can't internalize. They don't become one personality. They're fragmented. They're fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them, and most of them, are fragmented for life. And each one, mm-hmm. you know, may have its own personality, and they don't come in touch with each other. I know this because I used to work at Greystone Psychiatric.
Mm-hmm.
I was a state-certified technician. However, when people have DID, they suffer from DID because of sexual abuse, what happens is, yes, in time, they get, you know, like flashbacks, or they'll get little pieces here, little pieces there, memory comes back, and they certainly need to have psychiatric treatment, a good therapist, during that time, because it can be a very frightening thing that happens mm-hmm. to them, because they all of a sudden have memory. Memory comes back and it becomes a part of their fabric. Their fabric all of a sudden comes together, and the pieces of the puzzle that they had in their life, that too comes together. But there is a difference between that and what you're speaking about, that, you know, what you were speaking about. So the good news is that, yes, people can heal, absolutely can heal, when they have been sexually abused. Will I say 100%? No. And like I said on the last show, I know a lot of normies who aren't 100% okay either, okay? So, but they certainly can get to a level where they can function, they can be high functioning. And I don't mean that in the opposite sense. I mean in a sense where they can be people who are of worth. We are people of worth, and we do what we are meant to do on this earth. I believe that we go through what we go through for a purpose. I believe that. And it's a terrible road for many, you know, that we've walked through and walked down.
Yeah.
But we can be used. We can be used to help many other people so that maybe they don't go through the same things, or at least they know that they're not alone, because we have always that feeling of aloneness, you know, that no one quite has been where I have been. That part might be true, but they do have support today. We do have support today. And that's what NASC is all about, to have the support to give to people who have had, who do suffer from DID, okay, who have had, you know, that problem. And many are helped. Today they can be helped. And then also with complex opposed to PTSD. I was actually told that I had complex PTSD at one point in my life, and I have healed from that. So the good news is that you can, and you do, you can heal if you have the right people to help you. Do either of you two have any questions for the pastor? It is 9:16. Billy, you still there?
Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I'm still here. No, I don't have any big questions.
Okay.
I'm kind of want to... You know, I wish that other people would call in, because I want to know what's on their mind, the kinds of things they'd like to talk about, and because that's kind of the effective way this show would work if we could get it that way. But anyway, I really appreciate your being here and for, you know, telling us a lot about what you do and so forth. And, you know, I hope that other people will – there may be this audio problem that's stopping people from calling in. I don't know. But, you know, we really appreciate your being here and offering us all this great information.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm having a hard time hearing now. Really bad. Go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that I'm trying to help is, one, in the mental health world, that they will see that if you're a trained pastor in this mental health stuff, we can be a vital part of the healing and restoration. And a lot of pastors, they don't get this knowledge. They don't sit on these groups. They don't come out. They don't read. They don't know about child abuse. They don't know all the effects. So they can't really be I would call it a professional equal partner in helping, whether it's somebody in a prison or a jail, or it's on a group line, or if it's in articles, because you have to have, I'm one of those unique people that God said, I'll take your mental health, I won't waste any of it, and I'll use that so you can talk in both worlds, and you can sit with both sets of people, and be comfortable with psychiatrists and every kind of person that's helping people. And I work with law enforcement. I've been in prisons and jails. I know about that, so I'm comfortable. Where a lot of pastors are not. And I've worked with somebody who's seen a psychologist, and they're doing mind reprogramming from Satanism and hypnotism and all kinds of things. And I work very well with both, because I have both areas. You know, I study both. I go to meetings on both. I'm going to a 3-day human trafficking event with law enforcement in September. Friday, I'm going to a trauma-informed care stuff. So I'm doing both. And I think a lot of times it's almost like you need the psychiatrist and psychologist to be cross-trained. Because if we can all help together, we can get some people healed, recovered, and then they can be about whatever they're called to do to help other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, what we believe here at NASCA, and what I truly believe in my heart, I speak on an individual level. We a lot of times do that. I believe that when we come from past, you know, where we have history, where we have terrible history, where we've been horribly abused, you know, it leaves its ugly scars on us, and we have to heal from that, okay? Not that we can't, but we go through hell, a hell on earth. You don't have to worry about hell down under earth. It's hell on earth, you know, while we're on the healing journey and when we're coming into, you know, recognition of all the things, all the feelings, all the emotional things that we go through. We were told that we're stupid, we're ugly, we're whatever, mm-hmm. we're fat, we're skinny, I don't care what it is. You're never going to be like your brother or your sister or whatever the case might be. These are all things, that's emotional abuse, okay? We speak about sexual, physical, mental, emotional, and neglect. Mm-hmm. And when you go through all of those things, and some of us have, and I being one, and there's many of me's all over the world. When you go through all of those abuses, although any one of those abuses is bad enough, when you go through all of those abuses, it's harder to heal, and I still have to look back, okay, at the people who caused that abuse to a child.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I can say is that today, as an adult, I can look back at all of those things that happened that shouldn't have happened, and I look at it in a different light. And I do agree with you that that there's something wrong with the people and that or that person and people that abused me, that they too may have had some sort of history in their lives. However, what we do and what we stress on NASCA is that we don't have to be like them, okay?
That's right.
There's only as far as there's approximately, I'm going to say approximately because a lot of times people don't have the statistics as being the same, but 30%, say, of those who were raped, 30% may turn into abusers themselves, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This we seem to agree on. And we also agree that those people who have gone out and who have abused, okay, that they've had at least 124 children, or not children, situations where they have abused children, the pedophiles
mm-hmm.
I speak of at this
mm-hmm.
point. So
mm-hmm.
that's 124 times, maybe 10 times one, 15 with another, 5 times with another, whatever, coming up to the number of 124 approximately, okay? Now,
mm-hmm.
I fight for much stronger laws for those individuals. I don't think that they can be, I'm speaking on a personal level, I don't believe that they can be healed. And in my mind, from the Bible that I have read from page to page, from front to back several times, I don't believe, you know, it may help them in some ways in areas of their life while they're in prison, but the act has been done, and God doesn't like dirty. He doesn't like ugly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but what we actually strive to do on this show is to, you know, is to educate people about child abuse, mm-hmm. how it does affect society, and certainly how it affects the individual who is abused. And that there is healing. And people can call into us, you know, at we have the contact list. I will bring that up. We have the contact list.
Mm-hmm.
My name's on there. I'm up all night. And there's other people probably too, or night owls. I don't know. Well, we do support people who do call in. I get many emails from people and so forth and so on. I think that if we have one large umbrella, like Bill likes to say, and I believe this, people who work with community, like the Guardian Angels, I'm very friendly with them. They work with community, and they
mm-hmm.
try to, you know, to help change laws and so forth. And now the police are looking at them in a much better light, and I'm thankful for that. Work together,
mm-hmm.
people, work together. And I do believe that people do need spiritual healing as well, yes. I think there's a place for that. And we certainly need our therapists. And when you have police officers, some of us don't always agree on that. But when you're in trouble, I always say, who do you call? You call the cops. So that's my answer to that. But we all do need to work together under one umbrella, okay, under one umbrella, so that we can have a better society. So there is a place for all of us. There is a place for all of us so that we can do our work, and that is with society. And what we try to do is to educate society so that they can become proactive and why they should become proactive. A lot of the people that you speak of, if they had come from different backgrounds, you have to look at it in all different areas, environmental. That's what the sociopath, that's how they become the, it's environmental conditioning. Well, with the psychopath, it's different. However, they're both very the same, and they will murder, both will murder. But the point is, people like that should go to jail, should stay in jail. Rapists who go out, I believe, who go out and rape and ruin children's lives, I believe that they belong in jail so that they're not a part of society and they should stay in jail. Okay, I believe that. Because even on the Oprah show years ago now, where she had interviewed pedophiles who were in therapy, who were getting spiritual counseling, and also, too, a mental health counseling, not one of those men, and it was all men, have to remember, women can be pedophiles too. They weren't brought up in that show. She was interviewing men. But not one of them, they were honest, said that they could be trusted with children, even after all the help they'd been given. Okay, these guys have gotten help. So when we live in a world like this, where we have all different types of crimes that are being committed, there's so much evil in the world, okay? This is what we have, an evil world that we're living in. I think that we all have to work together and come to the realization that some people, even though it's good for them spiritually, while they're incarcerated, like you were saying before, to maybe forgive themselves, as Bill had once said, and also to forgive others, those that harmed them. This is a good thing. But only God is the one that judges, so we don't know where those people go. I cannot believe that Hitler went to heaven, okay? Can't believe it. I don't know. He's God's child, too. But, you know, but Jeffrey Dahmer, all the monsters that we know out there, it's hard for me to believe that, and I'm not one to judge. I can't tell God what to do, but I would not want to think that we would live on this earth trying to improve people and improve ourselves and all this other stuff, that they could go out and commit heinous crimes like that, and go to heaven.
Well, we're out of time.
That's how I feel.
I think we're out of time.
I didn't hear what he said. I can't hear him.
I think we're just about out of time, so you need to be aware of that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. The storm is getting worse here. I can hardly hear. I don't know if I can even be heard. I don't know what's going on here now. But it is 9:28. We had an interesting guest on tonight. Certainly covered areas that we've never covered before, that I can think of anyway. And I've been on here almost 10 years, for God's sake. It's interesting, maybe something to think about, but always keep in mind that when you do wrong, you know, you should serve, you know, it should match the crime, all right? You should go to jail, and your sentence should be, you know, match the crime. That's how I feel about it. If you're a rapist, you belong in jail. I want to thank you for coming on here. And it was an interesting show, and I only have about 60 seconds left, okay? So I want to thank you very much for coming on here, Pastor. You certainly gave people a lot of things to think about, and I want to thank also my panel that was here. And do either one of you want to say goodnight, Deborah?
No, I just want to reiterate what you just said. She certainly gave us an awful lot to think about, and I really appreciate her being here. So thank you very much, Pastor Deborah.
All right. I'll see you next month.
All right.
Okay. Deborah, are you still there? I can't hear. Deborah, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still. Oh,
I'm still here. And
I mean Deborah from Arizona. Go ahead.
I'm Pastor. I'm looking forward to looking at your blog and seeing some of your podcasts. So thank you very much for this show.
You're welcome.
There you go. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I need one of you to play the music when it's almost time. We have about 10 seconds left. So, okay.
No problem. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody. God bless.
Bye.
Good night now. Say a prayer for me. I'll have a storm here. Good night now.
Blog Talk Radio.